Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's the Ailish Hour, Hour 4 of the Fan Morning Show podcast. Take a look at wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, download, and stay up to date. If you missed the early ones, sprinkle them in throughout your day. Had Haley Salvian joining me for the first couple days this week. She's a national hockey writer at The Athletic. Give her a follow. She covered someone that we're having on the show in a little bit, Rebecca Johnson, who was just named as a member of the Calgary Flames player development staff, which is just one of a longer line of female athletes getting an opportunity to get their hands in the NHL world. You know, there's been obviously quite a few over the last year or so. Haley Wickenheiser headlining that type of transition. Sorry, Dr. Haley Wickenheiser, as if she needed more roles. She's obviously been with the Toronto Maple Leafs for a little while. Marie-Philippe Poulin, friend of the show. She signed a role with the Montreal Canadiens as well in a part-time player personnel role. And now Rebecca Johnson following in those steps. Former U.S. women's hockey captain Megan Duggan, also a manager of player development for the New Jersey Devils. Someone you know quite well in the history of women's hockey, Manon Raon, being the hockey ops and prospects advisor for the LA Kings in July. It's a great trend to see. Very, very impressed by the steps that the NHL are at least taking to acknowledge these women. Alexandra Mandrycki is also promoted to a role of the Seattle Kraken. Just this morning, assistant general manager, sixth woman elevated to that position this offseason, the first to specialize in analytics. So the trend is increasing weekly, monthly, and we get to talk to someone fresh off the announcement yesterday. It's Rebecca Johnson, forward for Canadiens women's hockey team and newest member of the Calgary Flames player development staff. Morning, Rebecca. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you doing?
It's so good to talk to you. I know you've been out and about all summer long, getting involved with the Flames prospect camp in July, and then now with this full-time role that you've announced. Just first of all, congratulations, and it must be nice to get this news out in the public.
Yeah, I'm really excited. It seemed like it happened pretty fast the last week or so, but I'm really excited for this opportunity. It's definitely a role that I wanted to do, and so I'm really happy that they were able to make it happen.
So is this a type of thing, and, you know, we've both been in the hockey world in different capacities, but coaching is obviously something that is really impactful as a player, especially when you're a young player and you need some development training. Is this something that you've always been passionate about and something that you knew for a long time you wanted to follow down this path?
I wouldn't say. I think for the longest time in my career, I honestly didn't really think about what I wanted to do after. Only the last few years kind of where I really started to think about it, and because obviously you can't play hockey forever, so just trying to figure out what I wanted to do after. And I did always have a passion for learning and just wanting to be the best on the ice, and learning from my coaches and trying to just be a sponge. And I feel like that was something that helped me get to where I was today. And so for me, on the other side of things, like I feel like if I can help someone develop, or if, you know, if I see areas in someone's game that I feel like I can improve and help them, you know, because I ultimately want them to be successful and make it to the top. So for me, I definitely have a passion for just studying the game and wanting to learn and grow.
Obviously studying the game that you did that at Cornell. You know, there's a lot of opportunity to be learning in an academic sense as well. But you faced some things like injuries, you know, longevity of your career as well, the mental side of the game. What is it that you feel is kind of your strong suit in terms of being able to develop younger players?
I think the main thing for me is I feel like I was more of a perfectionist on the ice, so I really wanted to always see improvements every time I stepped on the ice. And so for me, like, just always wanted to prove and be the best. And so I think that was my strong suit. I was just so hardworking and always wanted to improve and really didn't really take any time off, which has probably led to some of the injuries. But I feel like that's kind of a part of my strong part of my game is just, like, you know, how much I want to learn and grow. And so I would say that's my strength for sure. And for helping others, and that would translate into this role with just helping other of the players and the prospects and trying to help develop them. But yeah, I would say that's definitely my strong suit.
And getting the opportunity to add to this list of women getting to break into the NHL ranks, and I was listing them off before you joined the show, and it's incredibly inspiring. I'm sure if you're a young female or listening to the show, or somebody that's already in midst of your career, how important is it for you to be a part of that, to see that female representation continuing to grow in the NHL?
I mean, I think it's really special. It's awesome to see so many, you know, talented, hockey-minded women getting these positions. And, you know, even just my teammate recently, Mary Flip-Poulin, with the Habs, I just think it's so great to see. And I'm still a little bit, it's all new to me still, but it's so exciting. And I'm just so honored to be able to have this opportunity because it is something I feel very passionate about, and an area that I do feel like I can help and help with the Flames organization and help these prospects develop and grow in the game of hockey within the Calgary community.
Are there going to be any wagers placed between Habs, Leafs, and Flames games with the three of you kind of headlining the women's Canadian NHL roles?
Yeah, I mean, I that's a good idea. I should talk to people about that one.
I'll help you. I'll help you set some fun props if you need.
Okay, thanks.
So what is this season, what is this year ahead going to look like for you? I know you're not retiring. I know you're still, you know, going to be involved in the women's game. How are you going to, you know, approach this upcoming season as a player as well?
Yeah, I'm still trying to iron those things out. But I do hope to maybe play a little bit as well with the PWHPA. But my job obviously is number one and is important. But I do want to still stay in the ice and keep playing and just kind of see where everything's at. I haven't skated in a little bit now, so I am kind of itching to get back out there. So we'll kind of see what this schedule is like. But I feel like I should have time to do both.
Awesome. Well, definitely always looking forward to seeing you out there on the ice. And I know you weren't at the most recent World Championships where Canada claimed the third gold in 1 year. How impressed were you with the way that the girls played this summer over in Denmark?
It was so great to see. I mean, it definitely was a little bit weird being on the other side of things, like watching from the TV. But I am just proud of everybody. I know how hard everybody has worked and you know, all summer, all August, they were gone at camp and training all summer to prepare for this. So I am pretty proud of all of them and just Hockey Canada in general, being able to pull out a third gold in a row is pretty remarkable. And I know that's definitely the goal that Hockey Canada always has is trying to be the best that they can and winning that gold medal and being on top of the world. So I am really, really happy for all of them.
One of the most interesting storylines coming out of the World Championship was that real moment of adversity that the girls faced, losing to the United States in the preliminary round. One of their most, you know, the longest streak of international wins being broken. What does it do to a team when you have a loss like that against obviously such an iconic rival and how you bounce back and continue to grow from that?
Yeah, I think, especially in the round robin, when losing to the States, it's never fun. But I do think that you learn a lot from a loss and from failure. And so from, you know, my past experience losing, it really just makes you kind of step back and evaluate and see what's going wrong and what they need to change. And so I think if it just came easy throughout the whole tournament and you win every game, you might not have that growth. So I think for them, I think that's what they had to do was kind of just reevaluate and figure out what they need to change and what they're not doing so well. So, Yeah, and it showed more so in the final. And so I do think that those games are just as important, or more important than if it was just an easy way to the finals.
So they find a way to win when it really matters there in that gold medal game with the back-to-back-to-back major international wins. What does it just say about the women's program right now in Canada? And I know there's a pipeline of U18 and development program girls that are itching to get that role. Just the state of women's hockey in Canada seems to be at maybe one of the best it's ever been.
Yeah, I think the development, the girls coming up, there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of skill, which is great to see. And you saw that in the camp they had before the World Championship, where there's, I think 100 girls there, and there's a lot of talent. So it really pushes, you know, the players that have been on the national team for so long, really pushes them to keep improving and wanting to, stay on that team, on that roster. And then those other young girls are really pushing and trying to get a spot on that team. So it's definitely friendly competition. And so I think it does help the development of the program. And we definitely look strong for the next few years anyway.
Was there anyone younger in the program, whether they were making their debut or not, that stood out to you for fans looking to continue to watch a girl blossom in this program and work their way up?
I think I'm a huge fan of Sarah Potomac. I think she has been in the program a little bit, but I think she's a very talented young player. And so I think if, you know, she continues to gain that confidence, she can definitely be a force out there.
Awesome. Well, everyone listening, you know, I always champion women's hockey, women's sports. It's great to have you on to continue with that. Congratulations once again. Calgary Flames getting a good one. Wish you the best of luck this year, but not against Toronto.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show.
Rebecca Johnson, forward for the Canadian women's hockey team and newest member of the Calgary Flames player development staff, four-time Olympian, 3 Olympic gold medals, including the last one here at Beijing Winter Games. She wasn't in the lineup for Canada at the most recent IIHF Women's World Championship, along with a couple of the veteran players that had other stuff going on, which allowed for a lot of the younger girls to get a chance. She mentioned Sarah Potomac. Victoria Bach is another one. Used to be a Markham Thunder teammate of mine. Jesse Eldridge. A lot of new faces. Johnny's not taking a step outside of hockey, as she mentioned, but this will be her main focus, a full-time role in player development at the Calgary Flames. She'll be assisting with their prospects and on-ice instruction. So really just like getting right in there with the younger players. And I think she can add a lot. She's super smart. I know I mentioned she went to Cornell rivals, but give them credit when it's due. She's, you know, hockey knowledge off the charts. She's an incredible player. She was already working kind of with the Flames prospect camp as a guest coach. Clearly, they love what they saw. She secured this role. Looking forward to seeing what she does for the Calgary Flames. Keeping with the Canadian theme, I got to sit down with a pretty big name in Canadian golf right now, Taylor Pendrith, who was named to the international team at the upcoming President's Cup alongside a longtime friend of his, Canadian Corey Connor. So it's the first time that more than one Canadian will be competing in this best on best tournament, which sees the U.S. as well playing in this international squad. He had a bit of a tough up and down season, facing some injury, but he finished on an extremely high note, getting him this call. And headed to Charlotte for the President's Cup starting on the 20th. Mike Weir, Immelman, some of the assistant captains will be involved. It's just a great thing for Canada golf. Obviously, they get paired up. I'm thinking that it could be a really good pairing to have Taylor and Corey Connors alongside each other, the two Canadians. They also went to university together. They've grown up in the same worlds. I think they both attended each other's weddings and their wives are friends. Like, there's just so much of a connection between the two of them. It was just a whirlwind of a year for Taylor. He was a PGA Tour rookie this season. He missed 4 months with a broken rib. As I said, came back and killed it. Second place at the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit. Kind of the biggest achievements of his young career over the last month or so. It'll be a tough matchup. You know, I don't think the international team is really the top dogs. There's going to be a lot of pressure, but for the Canadians to be there to know each other really well on the course. They said they went to Kent University together, actually. They were each other's best mans. I did just get confirmation on that. That's pretty close. That's pretty fun. They also can complement each other really well. Taylor's known for his ability to drive extremely well. He's one of the best on tour for that. So looking forward to seeing this President's Cup just around the corner. I got a chance to talk to Taylor, as I mentioned. We pre-recorded this because he's a busy guy. But what it was like to get that phone call. He said he didn't really know it was going to happen. I think we kind of saw the stars aligning for him. I'm going to take a break and then we'll chat with Taylor Pendrith. That's next on the Ailish Hour, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So happy to be joined by a member of the international team for the President's Cup later this month, Canadian PGA Pro Taylor Pendrith. Taylor, thanks so much for joining this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I know it's probably been a bit of a whirlwind the last week or so. Congratulations so much for being selected two Canadians on the team this year for the first time ever. Just walk us through what this journey was like finding out and how it actually works.
Yeah, well, honestly, this whole year has been a bit of a whirlwind for me. It's been an interesting rookie season on the PGA Tour. But, I came back and finished strong. And Trevor called me a couple weeks ago and said that he is going to be selecting me for the team, which is incredible news. I wasn't really on my radar necessarily all year just because I've had a lot of time off. And but to get that call was amazing, and I can't wait to get going next week in Charlotte. It's going to be a ton of fun. It's going to be a hard week, and but I think our team's ready to battle. So really looking forward to it.
You sound like a hockey player. I love it. Ready to battle, ready to get in there, grind it out. It's the Canadian in you for sure. So is it a tight-lipped process? Like, you really didn't have any inklings or any whispers that you might be getting the call?
Well, Trevor has done some team events kind of throughout the year with everybody who could be a potential player on the team. But I was off for 4 months and missed some of those. But he texted me Sunday after the BMW Championship, which was my last event of the year, just congratulating me on a good year and way to come back from injury and all that. So I thought maybe he was looking into me, but, you know, the whole year, you know, I think I was more focused on getting healthy and coming back and keeping my card. And so to have this happen is just a huge bonus. And it's going to be a very memorable week. And, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. But, yeah, I kind of thought there was a chance, but wasn't really expecting it, so caught me by surprise, but obviously a great surprise.
And I'm sure added bonus is obviously to share this with one of your oldest and best friends, Corey Connors. I know you attended university together, your marriage, both of you had your wives stand up at your weddings. Like, you've been very interconnected with your journey. How much of an added bonus is it to be able to share this with such a close friend?
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. You know, I've been watching his PGA Tour career for the last 5 or 6 years, and he's had some great success while I was on the smaller tours. So for me to get out here finally this year with him and travel with him, play some practice rounds, and was awesome. And to share this experience is going to be great. You know, it's his first President's Cup as well, so pretty exciting for both of us. But who knows? Maybe we'll get paired up. I've played a lot of golf with him over the years. He's probably the person I played the most golf with in my life, and so it'd be pretty fun to get paired with him. But just to go through this experience and with him is going to be great. And I think all the guys on the team are ready, and it's going to be a really fun week. And we'll see what we can do.
I think there's just got to be, there's got to be that partnership. Canada would love it. We would all love it, just to see you guys get partnered up. I also think you'd probably complement each other really well. Is there a type of play or style that you've, you know, seen that you could be a good fit, having played so many times together, where you could actually complement each other pretty well?
I think so, yeah. You know, I would say my strength in my game is driving the ball. And Corey doesn't really have any weaknesses, but he's a very, very solid iron player. So yeah, I mean, an alternate shot, I could potentially see us getting paired up together. It'd be really cool. You know, he just got to get the ball in the fairway and he'll do the rest with his iron. So, We'll see.
I hope that's the case. It would be really, really awesome to see you guys get paired up. And in terms of just Canada golf at large, it's the first time, you know, both of you are getting this opportunity, but the first time in President's Cup history that two Canadians are on the international roster. What does this say about the state of Canadian golf right now, and how much of a boost do you think that'll give some kids coming up the rankings?
Yeah, obviously I think it's in a great place. It has been for many years. You know, there's tons of Canadians on the PGA Tour this year. And it just seems like every week you see a Canadian flag somewhere around the top of the leaderboard, and it's really promising. It's looking good. And, you know, there's tons of up and comers on the lower tours that will hopefully join us out here in the next year or two. Women's game's in a great place. Brooke's killing it like always. And so I think it's really exciting that that we can have two Canadians on this team, and to have Mike Weir there as well as a assistant captain is going to be really cool. Obviously he's played in a ton of these, and you know, can kind of share his experience, and it's going to be really, really cool. The three of us out there, and it's going to be great. It's it's the first time it's ever happened, having two Canadians on the team, and we're both really looking forward to it, and are super focused on the task at hand. And we've got a difficult one, but we're ready. It's going to be really fun.
It's been a good year for Canadian athletes, so keep it up. I'm expecting some good performances, and I know you guys will have, the whole country behind you. And in terms of your first year here on the PGA Tour, I know you mentioned it was kind of up and down. You faced some injuries, but you were able to get back and have a really good end to the season. Feeling good, first of all, physically, and second of all, what was it like to kind of staple the end of that season with a really good finish?
Yeah, no, I'm 100% now. Probably took a couple extra weeks off just to make sure that I was ready to go. So yeah, it was a tough time, really. It took 15 weeks off, kind of in the middle of the season, and obviously I would have loved to be playing, but was unable to do so. But my goal was to get healthy, and I knew I was going to have 5 or 6 tournaments at the end of the year to come back and try and get some points to secure my card for next year. And the first week I came back, I played great, kind of locked myself up for next year. And then my goals I readjusted my goals a little bit, and was able to get into the BMW Championship, and had a chance on Sunday there to make it to East Lake, which would have been amazing. But you know, my play has been very consistent since I've been back, and I think it was just a lot of patience I had to show during that time off, and just knowing that my game is good enough when I'm healthy. And so it was, yeah, kind of a dream comeback. I've been playing some very nice golf the last 2 months, and obviously to lock up everything for next year is great. And then next week in Charlotte's going to be really great, so can't wait for that. And hopefully more of the same next year with no injuries.
It's kind of a nice comforting feeling. At least I would think that you're peaking almost right now at this really good time. You took that time for yourself to feel recovered. And if your game's at the best it is right now, that's probably the best time for it to be feeling that way. What is it that you're feeling the most strong about right now, when you're headed to, you know, this big week ahead?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think over the last 2 months I've been driving the ball very well. Also having a lot of fun playing golf. I've missed it for those 4 months that I was off. So just being back and really enjoying it and having fun and, you know, I think helps with the whole golf game. It's a very mental game, and if you can enjoy what you're doing, it's always going to make it easier. But I would say kind of all aspects of my game have kind of improved this year. I'm driving it very well, wedging it well, and putting pretty good as well. So it's a good combo. But yeah, like I said, I think number one thing is I'm having fun, enjoying it, and playing some very consistent golf. So yeah, it's a good time to peak, especially with this big event coming up next week. But I'm in Napa this week, going to play the first PGA Tour event of the year to get ready for next week. So awesome. Yeah, it's going to be great.
Keep that momentum going. I know it's so first time, you know, as a full season here in the PGA. I know that they've made some structural changes over the last little while to kind of address the presence of LIV Golf. Has there been significant discussion among the players on tour about LIV? And if so, are you as involved in that? I know as a rookie, you probably, you know, aren't in the big decision-making chairs, but just how has this been kind of going through this season with this also, this bit of a side, maybe distraction at times?
Yeah, I mean, you can't really ignore it. It's, you know, the talk of everything, unfortunately, but yeah, players talk about it. And obviously I've talked to Jay, talked to a bunch of the other players, and I think the changes that they've made are great. It's definitely different than what everybody's used to for the last 10 years, but I think it's good what Jay's done and what the tour's done and how they've you know, addressed this issue. But yeah, you can't really ignore it. It's been the talk of, you know, golf for the past year.
Yeah, we've had to talk about it quite a lot.
yeah, I bet. But yeah, you know, I don't know. It's great to be out here on the PGA Tour finally. I've spent, you know, the last 8 years of my life trying to get here, and once you're here, it's great. So I'm really enjoying it, and I try not to talk about the other tour very often.
No, it totally makes sense. Back to like your side of it with PGA, I know there's that infamous players meeting with Tiger in Delaware. Just how important is it to have Tiger step up and speak outwardly? Because he's kind of a reserved guy when he's not on the course. You don't see him much. He doesn't really go do public events. I feel like that's probably something that you gain a lot of confidence from in terms of where you guys stand.
Yeah, totally. I mean, obviously he's the reason we're all here, and he's the reason that there's so many good opportunities provided to us being a PGA Tour member. So to have him there and talk to the players and Rory as well, obviously he's been playing some really good golf since all this has kind of started, and it's great to see him you know, winning tournaments and playing very well and being so so vocal about this. But yeah, it's in a great place. Tiger's not going to let the tour be ruined. So we're all very happy that he's on board.
I believe it. Last one before I let you go. The new TGL, Rory Tiger indoor venue. You're gonna try to make a run for that fun 3-on-3 format?
I don't know if I'll be selected for it, but
look at you now. You're on the President's Cup team. I think you might be.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one to see once it starts up. But I don't really know a whole lot about that. But
it looks kind of fun.
Cool, I guess. Yeah,
it's like a Top Golf for pros. How about that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Sounds good. Oh, I love it. Well, Taylor, I really appreciate you joining us today. We wish you the best of luck ahead. We'll be cheering for you, and hopefully, you and Corey get to share the stage together.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, thanks very much. It's going to be a really cool week, and
awesome.
Hope to make Canada proud.
You will. I know it. Thanks, Taylor.
Thanks very much. Yeah, bye-bye.
That was Taylor Pendrith, Canadian PGA Tour player, member of the President's Cup International team. As I said, getting in action on the 20th. Great to watch. Also, you can always guaranteed that there's going to be some live PGA conversation, but They're very happy to move forward with the President's Cup, get that kicked off. Go the Canadians. Happy to see them. I'm feeling confident about them being paired up together, Corey and Taylor. Last night, game two of the WNBA Finals took place. Aces continuing with their power over the Sun, extending their series lead 2-0 with an 85-71 win. They're up 2-0, just on the precipice of their franchise first WNBA title, led by the MVP, Asia Wilson, with 26 points, 10 rebounds to lead Las Vegas to game two win. Thursday night's the next game. The Aces were 0-6 in the finals before taking the first two games of the series with Connecticut. They were swept in the 08 championship, looking to secure their first title Thursday night. We're going to have Monica McNutt on, ESPN and NBA, WNBA analyst as well. See if there's any way to make this series with the Sun a bit more competitive. You know, Becky Hammon, former San Antonio Spurs assistant, has stepped in this year as a debut head coach of the Aces. She's clearly had a significant impact on their success this season. Before we get into that, Blue Jays, Rays continuing tonight, Stripling and Rasmussen on the mound. Set it up yesterday. Couldn't be more of an important series currently and ahead this weekend. Baltimore Orioles in town. Orioles are still 5 games back of the AL wild card. There was a time where they were neck and neck, but the Blue Jays in their previous series have given quite a gap. But the Seattle Mariners are half a game back with the Tampa Bay Rays as well. Yankees last night, Aaron Judge at Fenway hits 2 home runs. It's just inevitable at this point. Number 56 and number 57. Even the fans at Fenway were cheering Aaron Judge on, which is, as you can imagine, quite a shocking environment to have cheers if you're a Yankees fan. I know that Pujols is just a few away as well. We're seeing a lot of incredible baseball across the league. Alek Manoah adding to that last night, coming up from basically where he said that he felt like he was in a nightmare at 2 a.m. when he was feeling so sick. He had to call the trainer, let him know that he was unable to play in that first game, put an IV in his arm, had a lot of Gatorade, and he was able to do his flu game. A really important start to continue with the rotation being the way it is. You had the bench contributions, which were huge yesterday. John Schneider, as we talked about with Caleb Joseph earlier on the Fan Morning Show, praised a lot of what John Schneider has been doing in terms of putting people in positions to succeed, having trust in his team, having trust in his decisions. It worked with Espinal, Danny Jansen getting on base, Whit Merrifield with the RBIs, and then the Springer Dinger. Having the bottom end of the lineup contributing another comeback win. Things are looking good for the Blue Jays heading into tonight's game with Stripling on the mound. Consistent Stripling, someone that you can pretty much count on to come in and give the Blue Jays a chance to win. That's tonight, and tomorrow night back in action is the WNBA, and we have Monica McNutt, ESPN, NBA, and WNBA analyst joining us this morning. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning, Avis. How are you?
I'm so well. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, especially coming off a later night with the WNBA Finals, continuing Aces with the big win again over the Sun, extending the series lead. We're just seeing some continued dominance from the Aces, led by MVP Asia Wilson. What's just stood out to you the most about her play this season and continuing now into the finals?
You know, Alish, I think early in the ballgame, Holly Rowe had an excellent hit about it, and that it followed from Asia Wilson's sound, where she talks about enjoying the journey and being at peace. I think Wilson's experience in the bubble and the experience last year not making it to the finals. In fact, she said it. Like, she does not want her teammates to feel those feelings again, and she's doing everything in her power to be prepared. So there's a level of focus. I think she would probably say that the game has slowed down for her as she continues to hone her craft. And, you know, when athletes say things have slowed down, you better look out because they are coming with it.
Oh, I love it. And you know what? She's putting her money where her mouth is. Like, she made some comments a bit about Kelsey Plum, just like, hey, you got to pick it up a bit. And then Kelsey Plum had a response game. Like, what do you make of that critique and the way that they can hold each other accountable?
Well, I have loose connections to this squad. Nikki Fargus is a colleague at ESPN, who's their president. And I think the chemistry for the Aces this year is finally sort of settled, right? Mm-hmm. I think fit is a neutral in my mind. So I don't mean this as a negative necessarily, but, you know, last year there was Liz Cambage, and the year prior there was, I'm blanking on my name. She went to Notre Dame. She's now in Minnesota. But there were just too many guards, right? And so it finally feels like they are streamlined in terms of organizational success top down and what that looks like on the court under Becky Hammon. And so the pieces just fit really well together this year. And so there's a chemistry that allows for accountability because as a team, they have credibility. Look at that. That was a whole bunch of Italy words.
Damn, that was good. I loved it. But you're right. Like, emotional leader on the court, off the court, and it starts from the top down. So Becky Hammon, you mentioned she's got her first year head coach of the Aces. It just seems like she's pulled the puzzle pieces together and her impact on this team has been great. What are you most seeing about the way that she's been able to influence the play itself?
I mean, she is one of the best players to come out of the WNBA. She's had success as a player. She's struggled as a player. And obviously she's spent the last handful of years under the tutelage of Greg Popovich. And so I think the combination of both her experience and her preparation makes her unique, right? Like, I think we see former players wanting to get into coaching. And it's not that they can't, but the window of time that she spent under another Hall of Famer, I think, makes her preparation in particular especially unique and well-fit for a group that is, without question, one of the most talented in the league. And, of course, she has the MVP and Defensive Player of the Year in Asia Wilson. And so you put the two together. Again, we talk about that accountability and the credibility. There is no challenging Becky Hammon because she has done everything that you are attempting to do and spent so much time on her craft now as a coach. And so I think that's what you're seeing.
And someone like Aderica Hamby coming back from injury, how big is her impact been? You know, she's someone that has stepped in and made herself known so far, but is that another reason that the Aces are just being able to kind of control this series handily?
I mean, Aderica's a two-time sixth woman of the year, right? Mm-hmm. And she missed most of the playoff run with that bone bruise. Even if she doesn't have, you know, a double-double running up and down the floor like a gazelle, when you play a team like Connecticut, you know that they are going to be physical. So the more bodies, the better, right? She can mix it up in the paint. Last night, the Aces actually took the advantage back in points in the paint, and I think a lot of that had to do with not only the leadership of Asia Wilson and the commitment there, but Zierka's on the floor, and that's an area in which she excels.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so on the other side, what do the Sun need to do to make this a competitive series? I know that traditionally they're pretty good in elimination games in the playoffs. I think they're 3-0 this season. Is there someone you're looking for to really go off on tomorrow night?
I think the simple answer is still finding a way to get Dewana Bonner going. But I don't think that is an oversimplification because she is a huge part. But I think Asia Wilson in particular, but the Aces are really locked in on her, and they see her as someone that is an X-factor. Tomorrow night, they'll get to go back to Uncasville in the Mohegan Sun Arena. They'll have their home crowd behind them. They need to dominate the paint. Mm-hmm. If a game is ugly and Connecticut takes the advantage in the paint, that is points in the paint, that is rebounding, they are in their best position to win. But I think, you know, you get down by 20 points and you have to use so much energy to come back. Mm-hmm. Against this Aces squad, like, that's a hole that's too deep to dig. And so they have to keep pace, and they have to do it their way. I think if the ball continues to move, Dewana Bonner will be able to find some spots to get some easier looks. She'll also have to get out in transition. Transition points typically end in the paint. So that goes back to me to Connecticut's dominance and presence in the paint.
So you got Asia Wilson on one side being that emotional, vocal player, leader. Is there someone from the Sun that also fits that kind of dynamic of being the voice and the person that might need to go in there and say, hey, you know, I got our backs against the wall. Like, what are we going to do to change this narrative?
You know, I think this to me has been a question on the Sun mm-hmm. for a couple of years. Like, I'm not 100% sure who that consistent voice is outside of Kurt Miller. And some teams totally go with the philosophy of doing it by committee. To me, going into the series, it had always been Dawana Bonner. She's someone who's won a WNBA title when she was in Phoenix. She has some of that experience. But at points, we've seen it be Alyssa Thomas. We've seen Courtney Williams, who was on this team that went to the finals in 2019, be able to find some of it. So I think I really don't know how to answer that question because I'm not sure who it is. Like, I'm just not sure who it is, and I think that has actually been an interesting piece of Connecticut's narrative, I guess I'll call it, all season long. Well, somebody got to do it. Without question, somebody better do it or they're going home quick.
That's right. I mean, maybe this is the opportunity for that unsung hero to have that opportunity to put a statement on them being a leader. I mean, they kind of have no choice, as you mentioned. So got to get you to quickly give us a Canadian WNBA outlook. Like, you know, Canada obviously has some great stars being able to make this professional appearance. How do you feel about just the Canadian pipeline into the WNBA over the last couple of seasons?
I mean, the first person that comes to mind is Kia Nurse, who's mm-hmm. obviously battled injury but has been terrific. And then I know prior to game one, Kathy Engelberg the WNBA commissioner, announced that there's a plan for a preseason or exhibition. I'm not 100% sure. The language,
exhibition game. We can't wait.
Yeah. Exhibition in Canada. Listen, everybody I know raves about Toronto and its basketball culture and how great the city is on the NBA side. So if the W were to follow, I'm totally for that. Actually, it's funny. Yesterday I had a chance, or Monday I had a chance to sit down with RJ Barrett, who is one of Canada's loved players and has had a terrific NBA career. I think it's great. I think when an area is true to the game in that the fans are there at all levels in terms of the community, there's enthusiasm, and you've got talented athletes that have the opportunity to hone their craft. Like, what's there not to get behind? And so I love that for you guys.
Have you been to Toronto?
I have not been to Toronto. It's
okay.
On my list.
All right. Well, we obviously have a plan when you get up here. We'll make sure. And when that WNBA exhibition game's in time, it'll be fun. And I think you're right. There is a bit of a theme and a feeling here that could be maybe a landing spot for the WNBA, potentially with their expansion. I mean, I feel like the league's in a good spot talking about expansion. Toronto would be a great spot, you know, internationally to have it. Where do you think the next steps are WNBA-wide to continue growing what's been a really successful decade here?
Well, I believe that the hope is to have the expansion team figured out by 2025, and I know that there are 10 cities that they're considering. One, I would say to continue to find the talent, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think Rebecca Gardner with the Chicago Sky this year is a great example of how much talent is out there. And so the need for expansion will answer or solve the problem of not having enough places for players to stay in the league. But it is so important that whatever goes next is not just a great basketball community to me, but also a great women's basketball community, because we know that audience isn't always the same. And I think it's growing and starting to merge more and more. But I would hate to see a team just land in the city because there's a good NBA team. Mm-hmm. Because women's basketball fans are going to go and find their basketball. There have been so many reports throughout the year of super fans that drive 2+ hours to get back and forth to their local WNBA team. And so I want to be loyal to that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the appetite is certainly there, I think, for women's sports in general. I mean, I was a hockey player, and we had the same kind of dilemma of where do you put a team? But it seems like fans just want to be able to support regardless, but hoping selfishly that ends up being Toronto. Monica, last one before I let you go. You talk about that women's basketball community being so important. You know, we saw Sue Bird have her final chapter here in the WNBA career. Played for more than two decades, certainly inspired a lot of young girls to get into the game. What's her legacy going to be like in this sport?
You know, Alicia, the one word I keep coming back to is longevity. And I think my friend Justine from Just Women Sports, she tweeted, oh, no, not Sue and Serena in the same week, because technically it was within 7 days that both of their careers ended. But I think when we look at Sue or Serena, like, we're spoiled, and we really need to grasp that. Like, the longevity in terms of how long they were able to sustain greatness, like, that's not normal. You know what I mean? And so we really need to celebrate it. We need to appreciate it. Sue has talked about the later years of her career, really focusing on her body, her strength, her diet, and the sacrifices that she was willing to make to play this game that we loved, and we loved watching her play. So longevity is the only word that keeps coming to my mind when I think of Sue. It is nothing short of admirable and inspirational, for sure, what she's been able to do.
Yeah, you know, I love to see a legend be celebrated appropriately, and she certainly has been. But you're right, tough with Serena and her in the same week. We took a shot in terms of our icons, but there's lots of room for new ones to be developed. So appreciate you so much coming on the show this morning, Monica, and enjoy the rest of the finals.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Monica McNutt, ESPN and NBA and WNBA analyst, joining us last night, 2-0 lead. The Aces looking to capture their first ever franchise trophy. Back in action Thursday night. Yesterday, I saw that the Aces broke their attendance record again, back-to-back games. Sellout crowd of 10,211 for game two of the WNBA Finals. Headed to Connecticut for the game three. That'll be on tomorrow. We'll set that up throughout the day. Tonight, you got Jays and Rays, Stripling versus Rasmussen, 7 o'clock, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. Looking to bounce back from a tough Loony Dog showing, fans. You know, the game was great. Game two with the comeback win. Game one, I think it started with the only 21,000 Loony Dogs consumed. 2 weeks till we can redeem ourselves. For Loony Dogs, the Blue Jays looking to string together two good performances. Blair and Barker up next. They'll get you set up for tonight. That was the Fan Morning Show, the Ailish Hour. Take a look at the podcast, subscribe, and I'll be back tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening.